So let me start with my presentation, second presentation in this session. Let me start by saying that. Let me start by saying that this paper basically talks about employment guarantee programs or public works programs in developing countries. They have the potential to lead the economies towards labor-intensive and pro-poor growth. That's my first part of the presentation. And then in that context, I'll discuss the National Employment Guarantee Program in India. Now, one thing I would like to start with is that there is a global and national commitment to full employment. This is reflected in UN Declaration of Human Rights. It's reflected in ILO conventions and recommendations. And it is also reflected in national constitutions, etc. Because right to life is given by all the nations to their population. And right to life means right to work. Because unless you can work, you can't live. So it's a part of right to life. So productive employment is something which is committed. Full employment is something which has been committed by all national and global agencies. And that's why, as Rania said, productive employment has several advantages. It has economic advantages, social advantages, political advantages. It's something which is very much important, and I will not go on that right now. Now, what I would like to focus on is that under neoliberal policies, several labor processes have taken place which are very important and which call for serious concern. The first is that under neoliberal policies, a high rate of growth is achieved through a jump in technical progress, leading to increasing capital-intensive technologies, accompanied by declining employment elasticity of growth. Now, it's been seen that the countries where they have taken a high jump in labor productivity in terms of technology have grown very fast. And the higher the jump in technology and higher the jump in productivity, the rate of growth has been faster. But along with that, what has happened is that employment elasticity has declined. That means the lower rate of growth of employment per unit of output has taken place. This is okay and acceptable if we are able to provide this jump in technology and jump in productivity to all the population in the country. Can we do that? That is the question. Now, we can't do it for two reasons. One is that, where are the markets? If you produce, where are the markets? Now, earlier developed countries had markets in colonies. They could sell those things and they progressed. They could manage their capitalism in that context and they grew very fast. But we don't have those kind of markets, and we struggle very hard to get markets in the developed world, and we find it very difficult to get those markets. And secondly, where are the resources? So we cannot really follow that path. With the result that what has happened in our countries is that we have dualistic growth. On the one hand, we have a high-tech, productive, modern sector where the income levels are very high, people are enjoying modern technology and productivity. Well, on the other hand, there is a large segment of the population which is in low productivity, low technology kind of a situation, and we are trapped in this dualistic mode of growth, which has created several problems, including the problem of sustainability. Because if these people remain at the low level and they don't have purchasing power, they will not increase aggregate demand, with the result that it will be difficult to grow. And this growth, in other words, this capital-intensive growth is not sustainable. It will create problems of sustainability in the long run. The second thing which has taken place in the globalized market in the neoliberal policies is that the export-oriented growth has largely generated poor quality of employment. Now, this we have seen time and again, but I would like to point out a few things in this context, that the global market is dominated by global production networks, which keep core activities with themselves and distribute the labor-intensive part of job to different developing countries who struggle with each other, compete with each other to get that part. In that context, developing countries get a lot of pressure on their production structures. So the people who are exporting or people who are producing have different kinds of pressures. First of all, they have to have technological upgradation. Secondly, they have to have a larger size, so they try to do vertical integration, horizontal integration, so that they have better bargaining power and they can get better deal in the global market. But at the same time, they cannot afford to have a large size in production organization. So they go for subcontracting, outsourcing, and all kinds of things. So they enjoy flexibility because they require flexibility. And this flexibility of production results into flexibility of labor. And when it is possible to segment, and when it is possible to subcontract to this level, then we have at the lowest end women's labor market, which is segmented, which is home-based many times, and where women are enjoying low productivity, low technology, and low incomes. And at the same time, they also have piece-rated work. They also have temporary work. They also have poor working conditions, no social protection, and so on and so forth. So the globalization under global economy, the pressure which is put by global production networks, the given structure of production at the global level, results ultimately into this kind of quality of deterioration, drastic deterioration in the quality of employment. The third is that import of cheap goods has frequently resulted in closure and local production local production units, resulting in loss of jobs. This we have experienced in various sectors in various areas, like fisheries in India, or agriculture produces in many other countries which are exporting agriculture and so on and so forth. And secondly, falling global prices can create serious problems of local industries. For example, when quota system in textile and garment was removed, many countries could not face the competition and they had tremendous loss. Nepal, the textile industry and garment industry almost collapsed. South Africa also had a very adverse impact of this. So this is another thing that when you open up, then the possibility of your getting affected in terms of unemployment is also very high. Fourthly, the policies have exposed the economies to global volatility, leading to increased employment insecurity and to uncertainties and vulnerability. Actually, ILO has done a very good study on this, and what they have said is that we are now the risk society, where we face all kinds of risks. The risk is in terms of employment, the risk is in terms of jobs, the risk is in terms of skills, and the risk is in terms of income. All kinds of insecurities are generated in the modern economy because of the volatility of the global market and the uncertainties and risk which is prevailing in the market. So in this context, the situation is that our poor, and particularly poor at the bottom, workers at the bottom, are facing severe uncertainty and vulnerability. And lastly, neoliberal policies have impacted adversely on environmental resources, because for economic growth, in our economic growth model, environment doesn't appear anywhere. So loss of environmental resources are not reported, not recognized, not considered as important at all. With the result that our natural resources are depleting and degraded, getting depleted and degraded, which affects adversely on the livelihood of people, because 50 to 60% or sometimes 70 to 80% of the population of these countries is depending on environmental resources for their livelihood, either it is agriculture or fishery or forestry or whatever. So this is another thing which is happening. Now, in this kind of situation, the problem is that can we reverse the trends? What are the alternatives available to us? Now, first alternative would be that scrap neoliberal policies, restrict technical progress, design independent development policies, promoting labor-intensive sectors, and so on and so forth. Now, this is something which is not always possible. And so what do we do? Within the given structure, what we can do is that we can promote employment-intensive sectors. This is something which can be done within the given structure, and that is what I think we should do. Now, when we want to promote employment labor-intensive sectors, then there are three questions. The first question is, what will happen to the labor till labor-intensive sectors generate adequate employment? we promote these sectors, and after some time they will generate employment. Within that period, what will happen to workers? Where will they go? Can you make them starve? Can you leave them to themselves? Secondly, what kind of interventions or inputs are needed for promoting labor-intensive sectors? If you want to promote these sectors, what kind of inputs are needed? And thirdly, is it possible to use surplus labor for promoting labor-intensive sectors? And I think there is a possibility, and that possibility is provided by employment guarantee programs. Now, what are public employment programs? Rania has dealt with this in detail, so I will not go about it. I'll just say a few things about it, highlight a few points. One is that these programs are emerging as a strategy with dual objectives in different countries. One is meeting short-term need and ensuring minimum income to the people at the bottom who are sufferers. And second is that making use of labor to achieve medium or long-term goals. These are the two dual objectives which are emerging. And there she talked about different employment programs in different countries. And I would also like to list a few. For example, supporting households affected by financial crisis. This was done in employment programs in Argentina and Indonesia. Ensuring food security. This was done in Bangladesh and Ethiopia. Addressing structural poverty, South Africa, Ghana. Stabilizing economy during downturn in business cycles. This was done during the 30s depression in Netherlands, Sweden, and USA in the Great Depression period. So promoting labor-intensive sector to move towards full employment is something which is attempted, which is a objective, which is not in any of these things, but which can be related to these programs and to employment guarantee, particularly for developing countries. So all these objectives are okay, they are fine, they definitely play a role, but we have to link it up with employment-intensive sectors also, because that leads to full employment possibilities in these countries. And that is why employment guarantee is required. Now, the question is, why do we need a guarantee? Why not massive employment programs? Why is not enough? If you have large-scale employment programs, what is the harm? I think guarantee has got several very important advantages. The first advantage is that it empowers the people for whom the programs are designed, because it gives them in their hands a legal guarantee. They can say that we want work, they can give work, they can get work on demand. It's a legal right. So that is one thing which is very important. Otherwise, the employment programs are left to the sweet will of administrators. If they want some programs, they will take it up. They'll take the program here or there, depending on their convenience, and that kind of thing will happen. But this is something which gives guarantee, which empowers the poor. The second advantage is that it gives flexibility. Because today the peak season is there, and that's why people don't want to work for employment guarantee, then employment, the size of the program will go down, which is fine. And when there is a scarcity or crisis kind of a situation, a lot of people will go in, so the program will increase. So programs, am I going very fast? Okay. So programs are flexible. When demand is high, the program goes up. When the demand is less, program goes down. So this is something which is possible through guarantee. This is second advantage. And the third advantage is that if we have employment guarantee, then it ensures a scale of the program. That means you don't have fixed allocation, and that's why you can't go beyond it. You know, those countries which have tried out different wage employment programs have frequently felt that the given budget is there and you can't go beyond it. But this program provides some kind of a scale. So this is another advantage, that you have a minimum scale which is required, which is very important for carrying out the program. Now, role of public employment programs in this background would be, firstly, short-term relief to the poor at the bottom. Secondly, generation of assets to expand the labor-absorbing capacity of the mainstream economy through environmental resources, through infrastructure, etc. Third is promoting employment intensity in the second and subsequent rounds. Because if you take up the sectors, select the sectors, select the activities in the first round in a way that they are not only they are labor-intensive in the first round, but they also have labor-intensive impact in the second round, that then the employment intensity of the second and subsequent rounds also will increase. And it will promote human development, because if you take up health, education, and other kinds of infrastructural activity, infrastructural assets, then health and education will be promoted. And in other words, it should not be a purely relief program. should not create permanent army of unskilled labor, but should have a long-term goal. So there is an end of it. There is a goal by after which you may not require it on a large scale. You may require it for crisis, etc., but you may not require it for a large scale. And this is particularly applicable to the economies where there is structural unemployment and there are serious structural poverty issues. Now, how do we strengthen the link between employment guarantee and full employment? The first major link is through strengthening the sectors where poor are located. For example, to stabilize their income and enhance their productivity and production, if you can achieve through employment guarantee program, it helps. Now, as we know, the concentration of poor is primarily observed in agriculture, animal husbandry, dairying, fishery, forestry, and of course, informal sector. So these are the sectors where poor are concentrated. Now, if you want to improve them, we are talking about the first link, if you want to improve them, then we require good natural resource management. Irrigation, land water management, regeneration of common lands, grasslands, forestation, and connectivity and infrastructure. If you provide these assets through employment guarantee, then the sectors where poor are located will be strengthened, their productivity will improve, and they will be out of poverty. This will give a big push to watershed development, irrigation, etc. also, which is going on. Of course, this is the last sentence is not relevant over here. But basically, this kind of natural resource management requires a strong planning component. That means you have to plan in a way that you are planning to improve the productivity of workers in these areas in a systematic manner and in a multi-level manner. To give you an example, if you are doing some employment guarantee work in a village, and if you try to do water harvesting and stop water and collect water, that may create problems for the next village. Because if you are stopping here, then the next village may not get water. So in that context, you have to think of this water harvesting in the context of river basin and watershed. In other words, the planning has to be done at a different levels. Everything cannot be planned at the village level. You have to think of the level at which the resources should be planned, and particularly natural resources, this multi-level planning and concept of river basin, etc., are very important. So if you do this, then what will happen? Stabilize these sectors, reduce vulnerability and poverty, increase labor productivity and incomes, improve asset base of the poor. And in the second and subsequent rounds, this will generate surplus for diversification within and outside the primary sector with high employment elasticity. The second link is construction of socio-economic infrastructure. Now, lack of adequate infrastructure is a major cause of low level of development in developing countries. So basic infrastructure at the local level would be connectivity, that means approach road, link roads, and paving of the roads within the village, drinking water, sanitation, public hygiene, internal roads, housing for the poor, infrastructure for education, health, community facilities. All these things can be taken up under employment guarantee program, which will strengthen the village infrastructure. And this again requires systematic planning, and not ad hoc decision making for multiple reasons. Again, systematic planning is important because you can't connect each village and every village with each village and every village. In regional science, there are methodologies of doing this, and one has to think at a regional level for planning for infrastructure, certain kind of infrastructure can be planned at the village level. But if you go above village, then you have to think of this planning of infrastructure in a systematic manner also. And what will happen? Crowding in of private investment will take place. Increased employability of workers, health and education, and capacity building. Improved labor productivity through improved education. Improved health and reduced vulnerability. Because health, as Sergi was telling in the previous session, is a major cause of vulnerability of poor. Improved quality of life and reduced distress migration. This is something which is happening in large number of countries, that people migrate in search of work because there is no work available at home, and they migrate on a large scale. And this distressed migration is not giving any improvement, any help to them in terms of improved productivity, incomes, etc. Because there is no bargaining there. They live at the very low wage rate, and they hardly are able to access health, education, facilities, etc. So it's a kind of vicious circle which goes on and on. They are not able to come out of that vicious circle, and that's why if you provide work at home, and if you have investment at home like this, then distressed migration is likely to increase. The third link is through unpaid work and poor women, which Rania has talked about, so I will not go into details. But the only thing I would like to point out over here is that unpaid SNA work, that's the collection of fuel, fodder, water, and collection of vegetables, fruits, non-timber forest produce, and so on and so forth, as well as unpaid non-SNA work, that means care activities, household care, care of the old, care of the disabled, etc. Both these activities are a burden which can be shifted to public works. So if you generate assets and shift these activities into the public domain, then women will be relieved, employment will be generated in the mainstream, and these women will be able to take up more work, or at least will have respite from the work burden that they have. It will relieve them for productive work. It will reduce their time stress and improve their access to leisure or improved health, improve access to education and learning, because they are not girls particularly who are engaged in these kind of activities, collection of fuel, fodder, water, are not able to go to school. Boys also in some cases who are doing animal grazing, for example, they are not able to go to school, so they will be able to go to school. Then improved labor productivity of unpaid workers also, and shift towards gender equality at home and in the labor market. Increased improved mainstream employment through filling in hidden vacancies. So this link also will move towards improving women's condition, women's position, gender equality, as well as expansion of employment opportunities in the mainstream economy. The fourth link is functioning of the labor market. Employment guarantee program will have significant impact on the functioning of the labor market. Firstly, it will provide upward pressure on market wages. Because when you have massive employment generated of this kind and where minimum wages are paid, then the local wage rate is likely to increase. Now, there are quite a few problems over there, but if you do this in the long run or in the medium term, the wage rate is bound to increase. Wage inequalities will decline because men and women in the peak season and busy season, lean season, get same wage rate. All races, whoever works on it, will get same wages. A large number of wage inequalities will decline. It will encourage organization of workers. And here I will give you an example of Maharashtra Employment Guarantee Scheme, where workers working on the scheme got organized, and with their organization, they demanded large number of social protection activities. And particularly women who got exposure through this work made a lot of impact on women's life. Their dressing improved, their interaction improved, their employability improved, and their reduced migration also. This is we have already seen. So women's empowerment and gender equality is something which is important, which can be achieved through this. Women are predominant in such programs for multiple reasons, because these are low-paid activities, these are locally available activities which they can do very easily. And they are strenuous, drudgery. Women are used to it, so they are participating in a big way. Then improved employability, encouragement to organize, etc., etc. And cash in hands will empower them for doing many other things. So the overall impact of these programs would be that it will strengthen the poor where they are located, promotion of diversification within and outside primary sector, promotion to production of wage goods, labor-intensive sectors in the first and subsequent rounds, increase in aggregate demand, and directing growth towards domestic market, engenderment of economic development, and modifying the present growth path. Given the situation, it is very difficult for us to take out rallies and do all kinds of movements to appeal to policymakers to modify the growth path, that you don't liberalize, don't do this, don't do that, etc. But if you do this on a serious manner, if this is accepted and if it's taken up on a large scale, then it will definitely impact on the main development path. In a way, it's a thin edge of the wedge, which will make entry into the globalization thing. Now, let me say something very important over here, that employment guarantee program by itself will not do all this. It has to be supplemented by other things. You know, for example, if you are producing assets under employment guarantee scheme, then these assets need to be utilized. And utilization will take place only if there are policies which provide credit to workers, require training or whatever. If all that comes together, then only it happens. And here, again, I would like to give example from Maharashtra Employment Guarantee Scheme. They did a lot of watershed planning, percolation tanks, and whole lot of land water management. And then they provided these landholders with kit for promotion of horticulture. And horticulture developed to such an extent that today Maharashtra is a leading state in horticulture in the country. So these kind of things need to be synthesized, synergized, so that development takes place. But this needs to be done through other kind of programs. So you have to ensure productive use of the assets. You have to ensure support process to the processes which started through employment guarantee program. Then you can achieve this. But this is a critical but a very important first step towards full employment, because without this, other things will not come. So this is something which needs to be done. So it's, as I said, it's the teenage of the wage to modify the growth path. Now, emergence of NRG in India. Now, there are quite a few factors responsible for this. First is, of course, weaknesses of the wage employment programs, that they were operating at a very low level. They were left to the sweet will of administrators, whether they start the program, not start the program. Those kind of programs were going on in the country for quite some time. The first program after independence was introduced in 1960s, that was rural works programs, rural works programs. And after that, series of wage employment programs were introduced in the country, and including the last one, which was employment assurance scheme. But all this did not work. They all had problems, and that's why there was a demand for employment guarantee from several quarters. So this was from academics, but more from NGOs and large number of workers' organizations, trade unions, and all that. But the 2001 was a turning point, because that FCI food on the one hand and starvation on the other hand, as I said yesterday, public interest litigation was filed in the Supreme Court, and then NREG came after that. So crisis in agriculture, starvation deaths, crisis in rural areas in general, all these combined together pushed the government towards Employment Guarantee Act, and this act guarantees quite a few things to the people. This was this act was passed 2005 and launched in 2006 February in most backward 200 districts. Next year, it was extended to 330 districts, and 2008, it is extended to all the districts in the country. So it's a universal program for rural areas in the country. What are the entitlements? The entitlement first is employment, that every household is entitled to 100 days of work in a year. And this is their right within 15 days. And if they don't get employment, then they are entitled to employment allowance, which is 50%, one-third of the wage rate. And this employment has to be given at the minimum wage rate. Again, at the workplace, there are entitlements, that the work needs to be, the work site need to provide drinking water, creche, first aid box, shade, again, 8 hours of work, etc. So the wages are such that within 8 hours of work, if somebody works for 8 hours of work, he gets minimum wages. In planning also, there are entitlements, that a village panchayat has the power to plan. And 50% of the works are planned at the village level, and then 25-25 at the district and higher levels. Types of work is laid down. It's mostly about natural resource management and infrastructure. And its planning and implementation also has been worked out in a very systematic manner. How at village level, what kind of planning will take place, how participative planning will take place, block level, district level, state level, etc. Central council is there, state councils are there, state employment guarantee council, central employment guarantee council, below that at district level, block level, and village level. So the whole machinery has been planned out. And there is social audit also. There is, that means people can make the state accountable, and there is transparency involved in this. That means you have to have all the data. And now we all have all the data, all the details of this on the website. So you can see what is happening with village, with district, with state, etc., etc., on the website. The performance has been quite positive. In the first year, it generated 905 million person days at the cost of 104,617 million rupees. Second year, 1,435 million. Third year, 2,400 million person days. Now, this doesn't make much sense, so let me give you some more some more details of this. The first is that the program is targeted well. Scheduled caste and scheduled tribes are predominant, and the OBC also are predominant. Second, OBCs are predominant, doesn't come in the secondary data, but it comes in the regional studies. Second is that we have 45 million, about 45 million BPL families, and in the last year, 43 million households have been covered under the program. Now, it doesn't mean that all BPL families are participating or there is full overlapping, but this gives you a broad idea about what is the size of the program. 43% have been women, and share of women has increased over time. More than 1.2 million works have been taken up. In some pockets, market wages have improved, and in several pockets, distress migration has declined. This is what has come out in various studies. So these are some of the positive things. But at the same time, there are some areas of concern. First concern is that still a lot is to be done in terms of dissemination of information. Information, communication, and education. Not everybody around the entire country knows about it. So a lot more needs to be done in terms of extension of the program so that more and more people know about it and they are able to participate. Second, technical support needs to be strengthened and capacity building needs to be strengthened at the lowest level, village level, as well as at the block, district, etc., so that they are able to plan well. And this technical support in two ways. One is engineering and those kind of estimates making support. On the other hand, planning expertise support. So both the capacity buildings needs to be taken up simultaneously, need to be strengthened simultaneously. I mean, things are happening, but it still is a weak point. Ensuring guarantee of work. Many times works are taken up, but state governments feel scared of guarantee, you know, because they think that if somebody goes to the court and they are dragged to the court, they will have they will have to face these consequences. So what they do is that they many times do not show demand for work in data, and when works are taken up, they show this is the demand, this is the supply, and they say demand is met. Something like that. So some kind of manipulation is taking place. But this is bound to happen in the earlier period, initial period. Then there is corruption and improving administration. There is a lot of scope for improving administration. There are a lot of corruption charges. You know, we get different kinds of reports from different parts of the country. Because in some areas, there is a lot of corruption. In some areas, where social mobilization is taking place, corruption is very less. So in some areas where planning is very good, in some areas it's totally top-down. So all kinds of things are happening in different ways, but these are the areas which need to be strengthened. Then social audit system, which has been designed, needs to be strengthened because that's not happening everywhere to a satisfactory level. Sometimes social audit is done for the sake of doing, and state government said that we have done so many social audits and so many villages have been covered and so on and so forth. But that is a weak point. And weak planning component. This is, again, a very weak point because it has to have long-term perspective. You know, what is required for NREGA has got two major dimensions. One is the right dimension, right to work, empowerment, and so on and so forth. The other one is developmental dimension. That means use planning properly, using the productive assets, having long-term implications of the assets in terms of employment generation, and so on and so forth. So the first part is emphasized a lot. I mean, not that we have fully achieved, but that part has been taken up by a large number of movements and so on and so forth. But the second part is still lagging behind, and I believe that this part needs to be strengthened, which means that this program, whenever it is planned at village level or at any level, it has to have a long-term perspective so that this program is not a permanent program in the sense that it's not a generation of permanent army of unskilled workers in the country. We don't want that. We want that this program will end at some stage, because these programs will generate mainstream employment for the people. So long-term perspective is required. Strong planning component is required, particularly in some areas where you require multi-level planning, like in national NRM planning, particularly water resources planning and so on and so forth. Then dovetailing with ongoing efforts. This is another area which is very much important. And a lot of work is done on convergence now, as to how do you convert these programs which ongoing works. Because it's not that India doesn't have any natural resource planning. It is not that India doesn't have any infrastructure planning. We have major programs going on in these areas. But there are gaps, and there are many things which are lacking in these programs. NREG can fill in those gaps, and it can take up these programs on a larger scale also. But this requires dovetailing and convergence. That is one area which has been taken up recently, particularly in Madhya Pradesh, for example. Watershed development programs have been incorporated with NREGA, and watershed development, land and water management is being done through NREGA. In some areas, forestation is also taken up, and so on and so forth. So this is happening, but this needs to be strengthened. Then decentralized planning and implementation, because it should not be top-down. You know, there is a temptation on the part of the government to instruct lower levels that you do this, etc., etc. And if I give one example from my state, where our chief minister wanted some kind of village gardens, what you call Gram Vatika, village gardens in different villages. So he said that this village garden should be taken up under this program. Now, this is something which people don't want. Particularly the poor are not interested in having a lawn and nice colorful flowers and nice place to sit in the evening, etc. They want something else. So this was then taken out, because rally was taken out and said that this program will not. So chief minister had to withdraw. This wasn't taken up. So then skill training. These are, you know, as I said yesterday, this program has, after 3 years, has achieved a level where there is a need to introduce a lot of modifications. A task force has already been employed, set up to make recommendations about improving the program or making additions to the program. Skill training is one. Maintenance of public assets is another. Labor-based infrastructure development is third one. And inclusion of services is another. So these are the areas which can be added into the program in a much better way than what is being done. So these are the modifications which are required. So I would like to conclude by saying that employment guarantee program has a big scope, large scope, and it can make an impact on the life of the poor, and it can make an impact on the development path that developing countries are forced to implement. Thank you.